In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Let's say that somewhere out there, there's a school administrator. There she is, sitting at home when one night a lawyer calls to say that a well-to-do community member died and he left an inheritance for the children of the school. We'll just pick a nice number here, about $3.4 million. And in his will, he wanted to leave that money to fund the school so that not only the children's education would be paid for, but their children's education would be paid for, and so on into the future. What I've just described here is what's known as a fiduciary responsibility. That administrator is taking responsibility for an asset, in this case money, on behalf of the community's children. And so the next day, a truck pulls up with the cash. She's never seen such cash, and she doesn't know what to do with it. So it just sits there in piles and piles all over her kitchen table. And after a while, she doesn't want to deal with it, so she stuffs it into boxes and puts it in the garage so she won't even have to think about it. Over the years, she does spend some of it to keep up appearances, but as anyone knows, inflation is eating away at that, like termites in the walls. That money just sitting there is actually losing value over time. But even worse, she has a tendency to leave oily, gas-soaked rags laying around on her garage floor. And one day, there's a spark. And her garage and all those boxes and boxes of cash go up in flames. Now, the kids who graduated, instead of their kids' education being paid for, they now have to pay the added expense for their kids. And not just the parents of the kids, but all the businesses have this added expense of paying for education. And even people who don't have kids have to pay for education. That is what has happened in Oregon. When Oregon was granted statehood in 1859, the federal government set aside 3.4 million acres to be used to pay for the common school fund in perpetuity. Oregon has not only failed to generate funds for the schools, we'll talk about that with John Charles of the Cascade Policy Institute, but the lands are going up in flames. And not just here in Oregon. Forest fires are burning all across the nation due to federal mismanagement. Stay tuned for Representative Ken Ivory, who will discuss the national situation and how the federal government is fighting states and landowners more than they are fighting fires. But first, I'd like to welcome Susan Ellis Jones. She is the chair of the Baker County Republican Party and the newly appointed chair of the Oregon Republican Party Resource Committee. Unlike the rabid environmentalists responsible for these policies, Susan actually lives in rural Oregon. Baker County is one of the areas hardest hit by this year's forest fires. Susan, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing well over here. And so you guys are surrounded by all of these forest fires that are out there burning. We have actually been dealing with some of the smoke down here in the valley. What's the current situation like there? Are there still lots of forest fires burning? Are you feeling like things are finally contained? What's going on?
The thunder and lightning storm came in on August 10th, and that's when life changed in Baker County. What are we, 16 days, 17 days later? The fires are getting under containment, but the smoke is still thick. It has changed the viewscape of Baker County. Hmm. To a blackened, toothpick-looking moonscape.
Wow.
It is just very sad, very sad. We live and ranch in the Bridgeport area of Baker County, and the Coronet Fire actually started up Coronet Creek, which is right across the road from where my 94-year-old mom lives.
Oh, wow.
And that is where the fires back in the 80s actually started. And, you know, the rest is history. What I would like to say is I do want to express my gratitude to the firefighters who put themselves in danger. But then I look back at forest management over the last 30, 40 years, and at the same time, we have created a fire economy.
Hmm.
And it bothers me. And you come over here, I mean, Baker was a good tourism spot. Now we're burnt up. We went over Dooley Mountain for the first time since they opened the roads last Sunday, and it is just looks like it's been bombed.
Wow.
And it was very, very sad. And I know the Eagle Complex fire is still burning. The Coronet Windy Ridge fire is the one that really impacted the Bridgeport area where we live, and it's now 80% under containment, but the Eagle Complex fire on the other end of the county, I don't even think it's that close to containment, but it's impacting that side of the county as well.
So in terms of what life is like there, I mean, is there still kind of a constant fear there that this is going to continue, you know, that maybe the wind is going to change or something and that things are going to blow up again? Or, I mean, what's that like?
Well, from the Coronet Windy Ridge fire, it's pretty well contained. I don't believe that could blow up again. But the danger is still there on the areas that have not burned in Baker County that another lightning storm could come through.
Hmm.
We were under evacuation warning. We're still packed up.
Wow.
And, you know, another fire, and we may be under evacuation again.
You know, you've mentioned the mismanagement here of the state lands, and so it sounds like this is something that could have been prevented. It's not like it's one of these fires that, you know, no matter what anyone was going to do, it was simply going to just go at some point. If there had been better management, talk to us a little bit about what that would have meant in terms of the fire. I mean, would it have been a lot easier to control, or do you think that this is the type of fire that probably would have gone up regardless of the management?
Well, I talked to a forester in town, and actually he did an article in the Baker County Press back in February about the beetle kill that has increased the fuel loads up on Dooley Mountain, which is what burned in the Coronet Windy Ridge fire. And that they did not log it. You know, and grazing allotments, they have been reduced from 30 years ago till today. I mean, there's still some grazing, but not like it used to be. The fuel loads were heavy. Now, the conditions were ripe for a fire with the drought, with the temperatures, and with the winds. But had the fuel load been reduced, I think common sense tells all of us that they could have gotten a handle on the fires a lot quicker.
I'm sensing kind of a feeling of betrayal on your part, feeling betrayed by the left wing over here in Portland and Salem and Lane County and so on, these environmental policies that are driving this state land management. If you could ever talk to some of these environmentalists that just want that hands-off sort of approach to land management, what would you say to them if they'd actually listen to you? And you got about a minute here.
Okay, I would invite them to come over and look at what their policies have created in Baker County. To look at the dead animals, the dead cattle, the wildlife that died in these fires, the wildlife that escaped, now are homeless. We will never see the regrowth of all of this beautiful land in our lifetime. It's gone. It is absolutely heartbreaking because we will never see Baker County the way it was in our lifetime.
Wow.
I mean, how do these policies help anyone?
Yeah. Susan Ellis-Jones, I want to thank you for your time today. And boy, just stay safe over there.
Okay, thank you.
And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Network, Oregon's second largest radio network. Today we're talking about the management or mismanagement of Oregon state lands. I'd like to welcome John Charles, who is president and CEO of Cascade Policy Institute. Cascade Policy Institute is a free market think tank based right here in Oregon, working to promote individual liberty, economic opportunity, and personal responsibility. John, it's great to talk to you.
Well, thanks for having me.
So the State Lands Board, let's kind of maybe back up just a little bit. We want to talk to you about the Elliott State Forest sale that just made the news here recently. But the State Lands Board itself is comprised of a three-member board, which is the governor, the state secretary of state, and the state treasurer who control the state forest lands. I'm sure with the likes of Kitzhaber, Kate Brown, and Ted Wheeler in charge for the last 6 years or so, they're such free market advocates, I'm sure. But what exactly is that board supposed to do?
Well, the State Land Board has control over a slice of the total state forest, and that slice is the Common School Fund. And the Common School, state trust lands and the Common School Fund. So the state trust lands were deeded to the state of Oregon at the time of statehood, and the purpose of those lands is to serve as an endowment fund for the so-called common schools, which we now refer to as K-12 public schools. So the Elliott State Forest is a small part of the total portfolio of trust lands, which is over 700,000 acres, but the Elliott State Forest is sort of the crown jewel in terms of its potential to make money. But over the last 25 years, due primarily to environmental litigation, the money-making potential of the 84,000-acre forest has diminished to the point where now it's not making money, it's actually losing money for the common schools, and the land board, by constitution, has a fiduciary trust or a fiduciary obligation to manage those lands for the best long-term financial benefit of the common schools. And when you're losing money, that's a problem.
Yeah, that's not exactly fiduciary responsible. So in terms of the Elliott Forest, though, why are they looking at selling it at this point rather than simply leasing out the land to a timber company that could come in and harvest the timber there?
Well, under state ownership, under the so-called leadership of the land board, they've tried a lot of different things. None of them have worked. And they were advised by their own consultant 20 years ago that the best thing they could do would be to sell the lands and get out of the land management business. They ignored that advice, and now the value of the land has diminished more than 50%, its market value. And so they're only really left with one thing to do, and that is to sell, although the proposal they have now to sell with a lot of constraints on it is probably not going to work. But they really just need to get out of the business, take whatever money they can get from the sale, put it in the stocks and bonds, and manage that as an endowment, which they've done quite well, actually. The state treasurer's office has.
Well, you've talked about how the State Lands Trust has this fiduciary responsibility in order to manage those lands and to fund the Common School Fund. So if they're completely out of compliance on that, why has no one ever sued the state to force them to abide by the laws under which those lands were granted?
It's been a mystery to me for the 19 years that I've been writing about this. I've had conversations with various groups that arguably would be considered beneficiary groups, which might be school boards associations, school employees associations, teacher unions, PTAs, any group that arguably calls itself a beneficiary of the trust fund could have sued. In my opinion, should have sued long ago for breach of fiduciary trust. Now that the Elliott State Forest is losing about $1 million a year, and they haven't. They seem satisfied, as far as I can tell, with the current mismanagement. And you'd really have to ask one of them why they're satisfied.
In terms of standing, because obviously you have to have standing in order to sue, could you actually get together maybe a group of Oregon taxpayers and sue? Because by not managing that land, they're essentially shifting the burden to the Oregon taxpayer.
It would be, well, I'm not a lawyer, and so you'd have to have the taxpayers could sue if they showed probably that they were all parents and that they had a direct financial interest in the funding of schools. I actually considered suing them myself about 15 years ago, and I went to a lawyer friend of mine, and he said, well, your son is no longer a public school student, so you probably wouldn't have standing. And furthermore, I didn't want to take all the financial risk myself, so I dropped that idea. But certainly any kind of organized group that has a stake in schools probably would have standing and could sue, and I wish somebody would sue.
Hmm. Well, you guys have a great article up on Cascade Policy Institute's website discussing the poor management of the state lands, and in that article the author talks about how we've gone from 3.4 million acres originally granted from the feds to Oregon down to about 772,000 acres of state lands, of which 96% of those state trust lands show no signs of generating revenue in the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, that's just shocking.
It's shocking, and it just says to me that the state land board cannot manage these lands. They're institutional. The three members of the land board are probably the most three most political people in the state. And they really, it's unrealistic to think that they are going to take this fiduciary obligation seriously, coupled with the insatiable appetite of environmental organizations to sue the land board, sue almost any public body over and over and over. under almost any environmental argument they can make to prevent commodity production and revenue generation from these lands. Given those two factors, my own view is we should do what some other states have done, which is to sell off the last remaining portion of the trust lands, as you said, 772,000 acres, sell it off, take whatever the market will bear, put the money into the Common School Fund, which has over $1 billion and which has averaged over 8%.
Johnny, you there? Okay, we seem to have lost John, so we will go ahead and take a break right now. Everyone stay with us. We'll get him back and come back after this. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to John Charles of Cascade Policy Institute. Cascade Policy Institute, if you're not familiar with them, they are a free market think tank based right here in Portland, Oregon. John, we lost you there, but you were saying what you think ought to be done with the state trust lands and essentially sell off the remaining acres and put that into the Common School Fund. And I think that you were starting to say that we have been generating about 8% per year on that.
The Common School Fund has earned about 8% per year over the last 25 years, over 13% annual return for the last 3 years. So there is no conceivable scenario of land ownership of these trust lands that would be better for public schools than to simply sell off the remaining trust lands and put the money into the Common School Fund and then invest those funds in stocks, bonds, and other financial instruments.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about there's this article here from the Register Guard on Eugene, and they are also concerned about the sale of the Elliott Forest, and they basically think that the Elliott State Forest, selling that would be a horrible idea. He says the State Lands Board's decision to sell the Elliott State Forest illustrates the willingness of Oregon's timber industry-dominated politicians to privatize public forests. You know, talk about the delusional left. I had no clue Oregon's politicians are dominated by the timber industry.
I don't know what the gentleman is talking about. Yeah. I'm not aware that Ted Wheeler, Kate Brown, and Gene Adkins danced to some tune created by the timber industry.
Yeah.
And it really has nothing to do with corporate management. It has to do with understanding the term fiduciary obligation.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you preside over an 84,000-acre forest that is losing money and is going to lose money for the foreseeable future due to almost exclusively environmental overreach by environmental groups who will sue to infinity to prevent commodity production on these lands, as well as the other 700,000 acres left in the state trust land portfolio. Okay, they've won. They've won so much that the only reasonable thing for three people with a fiduciary obligation to do is to get out of the land management business, sell it off, put the money into other assets that clearly and demonstrably have been earning over 8% per year for the last 25 years. So this is really not even a discretionary duty. This is what they have to do.
Right. That's right.
And there are, more than 50% of Oregon is in public ownership, and all those other ownerships have different kinds of legal responsibilities. But for this specific case, the specific Elliott State Forest, of the 93,000 acres of the forest, 84,000 have only one legal purpose. And since they can't meet that legal purpose by actually owning it, they really have no choice but to put it up for auction, take the most money they can get, and put it in stocks and bonds.
Yeah, yeah. That author goes on to say that if Oregon's governor seeks to significantly bolster school funding, she should review the decision by her predecessor to relieve large forest owners of their obligation to pay the annual timber harvest privilege tax. What exactly is he talking about there?
He's just talking about a different type of tax on private landowners, and his assumption is that if you don't have that or a series of other taxes on private landowners, that that's somehow a subsidy that needs to be remedied. And my own view is timber land owners are not a subsidized group. They're paying their fair share. They do pay taxes. They're heavily regulated. In fact, I can think, it's hard for me to think of a less lucrative thing to get into, especially if you're trying to fund schools, a less lucrative thing than to own timberland of any kind. You're just a sitting duck for people who want to tax and regulate and litigate.
Yeah.
So he can complain all he wants, but I don't think the timber industry is subsidized. And furthermore, it's irrelevant to the legal mandate under the Oregon Emissions Act and the Oregon Constitution to manage the LA State Forest for maximum long-term revenue for common schools.
Yeah, it'd be like the Justice Department deciding they're no longer going to pursue any criminal cases anymore. I mean, that's kind of the equivalent there. Of course, it's that article is filled with the typical scaremongering by the left that they're going to come in and denude all the forests and just destroy the land and kill all the fish and so on and so forth. But it does bring up the discussion again of what ought to be done with all these state lands. And coming up, we'll be talking with Ken Ivory, who is a proponent for states managing their own lands and taking the lands back from the federal government. Obviously, under a far-left management here, like what we have here in Oregon, we can see that the lack of management and the lack of revenue, but if we had pro-free market politicians, would you be in favor of Oregon taking control of the federal lands within its borders?
Generally speaking, yes. I think it's very clear empirically that states, especially states such as New Mexico and Arizona, where they make a lot of money off of state trust lands, those states that want to do so have raised much more money from those lands than the feds. But in Oregon, we don't. Really, given that Oregon is almost 60% publicly owned, to me, it would be a lot better to sell off quite a bit of those lands to the private sector. But if we can't do that, and we probably can't, I certainly agree with Ken that much of the federal domain should be transferred to the state, where you would have slightly better chance in Oregon of improved management compared to the status quo.
Yeah, slightly improved. It's interesting, you know, getting back to that article there on Cascade Policy, and we'll be sure to link that up on iSpyRadio.com to make it easier to find. Talk to us a little bit in terms of what these other states are doing, because here in Oregon, we're essentially break even on our state lands versus, I think it was New Mexico, $41 an acre. What are they doing that's so different?
To me, it's mostly a matter of a mindset. In New Mexico and other Western states, they are proud to own these lands as a form of an endowment. They aggressively look to make money off them, and they do. In Oregon, it's very clear the land board members themselves believe that having these lands as an endowment for schools is a 19th century idea. It's silly. We really shouldn't even cut a twig over there in these forests, and we should escape that whole notion and have it as a big, bird farm and do something else. So until you have a different mindset in Oregon, then you're not going to solve the problem.
No, absolutely not. And unfortunately, we're back to the old idea that elections have consequences, and we're stuck with what we have, unfortunately. John Charles of the Cascade Policy Institute, I want to thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And coming up next, Representative Ken Ivory will take a look at what's happening beyond Oregon's borders. You're probably not going to believe what the federal government's doing. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show, where every week we keep an eye on big government. This week's show is about the continuing mismanagement of state lands, and no greater example of that than the thousands of acres currently burning up all across the Pacific Northwest, California, and other parts of the nation. We would like to now continue that discussion with Representative Ken Ivory. He's also the president of American Lands Council, which is championing the national movement for states to take possession of the federal lands within their borders. Ken, it's good to talk to you again.
Mark, it's always good to be with you. I have to correct you slightly. It's millions, tens of millions of acres that are going up in smoke now.
That's very true. Thousands of thousands of acres. So, what are you hearing from some of these states that are members of American Lands Council where they've got all of these forest fires? What are they saying in terms of loss of property and livestock and the dollar amounts of damage?
You know, it's the greatest epic environmental catastrophe of our age. And it doesn't have to be this way. I mean, it really is a matter of simple math. When you keep the forest at sustainable tree densities, You have an abundance of water. You have healthy habitat. You have healthy air. And the fire drops to the ground and is healthy fire. But with the overabundance of fuel load from failed policies where even those on the ground that are well-intentioned that want to manage a healthy forest, their hands are tied by what the Forest Service itself, Mark, calls its process predicament. That's a 2002 publication report of the U.S. Forest Service that says its own process is creating this predicament. Well, what they call a predicament is killing people on the ground. It's killing wildlife by the millions. It's destroying watershed for generations, and it's polluting the air in devastation so far beyond tailpipes and smokestacks that this catastrophe demands more local control by those whose lives and livelihoods depend upon the wise use of the land, who know their unique and diverse lands best and can manage and prepare for it. It really is just a huge tragedy.
Well, it's a tragedy, and it's such a, you know, as you point out, it's such a simple answer to the solution here, is, you know, letting people take care of that land, letting the people that are on the land take care of that land, and yet you've got people that are thousands of miles away trying to make decisions as to how to manage those. It's nonsense the way that they're approaching it. And, you know, in our first segment, we talked with Susan Ellis-Jones. She lives over there in Baker County, Oregon, and just really heartfelt discussion of the absolute destruction. She called it, it looked like a moonscape now with these burned out matchsticks still standing. And, you know, they've been fighting these fires over there, and you were there just a year ago. And it seems to me you had actually talked to them about the dangers of what was happening.
You know, I was, and it's so sad to see what's happening there. I was there a year ago meeting with the good people there. We spent a day and went up and drove up into the forest and looked over. And, you know, it was interesting to talk to the people, and they said, look, jobs used to be so plentiful. You come to town within an hour or two, you could have a job working in the mills and keeping sustainable, healthy density in the forest. There was healthy snowpack, healthy watershed, healthy habitat for wildlife. As these policies, the management by litigation, where these so-called environmentalist groups are now paid our own tax dollars to sue and shut down proper and healthy management of unique lands, and then this process predicament of this bureaucratic one-size-fails-all management has shut down all the mills, and now the jobs are gone, and they knew, Mark, they knew. I mean, you could see it in their faces. They knew one spark and their watershed is gone. One spark, their community is devastated. One spark, their wildlife is killed in the millions, their air polluted, and here we are. And so we know this is the most avoidable tragedy that really is bordering on criminal.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely it is. And you know, we talked with John Charles of Cascade Policy Institute about that thing, about that very thing, and It does seem like this is criminal in the sense that they have a fiduciary responsibility to be making money for the state, for the common school fund, and yet they are actually losing money on it. I mean, Oregon, I think right now is maybe break even in terms of the amount of expenses that they have versus the amount of revenue that they generate, but they could be making so much more.
Well, and it goes so far beyond just the economics. The economics, if you have a healthy forest, the economics takes care of themselves.
That's right.
But when you talk about pillaging the land, this is so-called environmental clear cutting.
Yeah.
That's going to be a moonscape for decades. And so your watersheds are impaired for decades. The habitat, the fisheries impaired for decades. The magnitude of this, the criminal magnitude of this, goes so far beyond just the economics. I mean, you think about the EPA that would level fines for secondhand smoke,
right?
But do nothing for 10 million acres of forest going up in smoke, and the carcinogens, the NOx and the SOx and the VOC and the mercury. They say nothing about that. You know, the man in Wyoming who gets a state permit to put in a pond on his own land and gets the state permit, gets the approval. The EPA wants to fine him $75,000 a day for improving watershed and a pond on his property, but they say nothing about the absolute destruction of watershed throughout the West. And we know there's 86 million acres still in this catastrophic condition, just one spark away to destroy more of the watershed throughout the arid West.
Yeah.
No, this is bureaucratic recklessness run amok at its absolute worst.
Yeah, absolute malfeasance. All right, let's go and take a break there. Coming back, I'd like to talk more to Ken about that criminal aspects of all of this. Stay with us. And we're back. We're continuing our discussion of the mismanagement of state lands. And we are talking with Representative Ken Ivory, who is also the president of the American Lands Council. Their website, if you'd like to go visit that, is AmericanLandsCouncil.org. And, of course, we'll always link that up on iSpyRadio.com, just like today's show, which I believe is 535. Ken is spearheading the national movement for states to take possession of the federal lands within their borders. And, Ken, we were talking about, going into the break there, really the criminal aspects of all of this, because you're right, you see these agencies fine these farmers that are just trying to get, as you pointed out, put a pond on their own land, and these guys are fined for this, and yet here are tens of millions, if not billions of dollars that are just literally going up in smoke due to the agency's own malfeasance. So who do we hold accountable for this?
Well, that is the question when you have this type of one-size-fails-all bureaucratic stranglehold. Think about if you had Georgia Pacific or some other warehouser had allowed their forest to get to 1,000 trees per acre into this completely unsustainable, catastrophic wildfire condition that the Forest Service tells us itself 86 million acres under its management right now are in catastrophic condition, one spark away from the next mega fire. Mm. Imagine that were Weyerhaeuser or Georgia Pacific, and they created that condition, and the fire came through and killed people and destroyed wildlife, killed them in the millions, polluted the air, destroyed the watershed. What would that accountability look like? And now you think about BLM and Forest Service that are managing in that catastrophic condition by their own admission, and yet with bureaucratic management, one size fails all, thousands of miles away, there's no one that you can hold accountable. There's no one that you can unelect for that tragedy. And even in Congress for Oregon, there are 528 or 29 members of Congress you don't vote for.
No.
You can't elect or unelect. But if it were your local officials at the state or the county level, as you would with a private party, you would have someone to hold accountable for that type of malfeasance.
That's right. It's a lot easier to hold somebody accountable who is your neighbor versus somebody that lives 10 states away. It just doesn't happen. And now Utah, you guys have passed some sort of law that sort of addresses this, does it not, in terms of the mismanagement of the environment?
We did. Representative Christofferson, a colleague of mine, passed a bill that he and I worked on closely together called the Catastrophic Wildfire Public Nuisance Act. And what it does, Mark, is when you think about it, do we really have to sit on our hands when our watershed is at risk by their own admission? Our air quality is at risk. Our recreation areas, our fisheries, the consequences of life and property at risk. Those, the Supreme Court has said repeatedly, health, safety, welfare, things that impact the lives, liberties, and the property, that is jurisdiction possessed by the states, but not the federal government. That's a direct quote from a Supreme Court case just 3 years ago, that jurisdiction is possessed by the states. It makes no sense that locally elected accountable officials with that jurisdiction should have to sit on their hands seeing that risk and wait for the next spark and then figure out how they may hold an unelected bureaucracy accountable instead of acting to protect their communities from the known risks of catastrophic wildfire. And so that's a bill that we passed in Utah. We've got counties that are now looking at their wildland-urban interfaces and what the mitigation that needs to happen to reduce that risk, because the Forest Service simply doesn't have the funding or doesn't have the flexibility with all of the litigation and the process and procedure that is imposed upon itself to deal with these immediate risks to the environment, to wildlife, to habitat, to human life and welfare.
Well, I do think that these agencies should not only be ashamed of themselves, I do think that it's time that they get punished somehow. And certainly in terms of not, failing to follow their fiduciary duty. But we see all the time that these environmentalist groups are out there suing one agency after another for noncompliance. You're an attorney. Have you given any thought to suing these agencies yourself as part of American Lands Council?
There's a lot of discussion about that. The problem is with the federal government, they have what's called governmental immunity, that they can only be sued if they agree to be sued. And so in the environmental instance, they've agreed to be sued by these environmental organizations, and they've agreed by statute to pay their fees with your tax dollars. So, I mean, when you talk about is there no shame in these bureaucracies, no, there's not. There's no such thing as shame in a bureaucracy. When I was in law school and I took an administrative law class, they said, when you go into a government agency, your job is to grow that agency's budget, because the more money is the more power. And so think about that in a fire context, in a Forest Service context. The more fire, the more emergency on people's minds, the more funding to fire. And that's what that agency is doing. It's funding fire. It's not funding prevention. It's not funding maintenance. It's not funding habitat restoration. It's funding fire, because that's the cheapest and the easiest way to drill people's attention to a funding source, and that's what the agency's doing. Think about this thing that happened in Colorado recently, Mark.
With the
Animas River. The EPA was on site because whatever trickle was coming out of the mine, they viewed as a catastrophe, and they were preparing to level fines of $35,000 a day to the mine operator. And so they took over because it was already a catastrophe. And then knowing the risk ahead of time, I mean, these are Don Quorum, Representative Quorum in Colorado. I was on the phone with him yesterday. They've admitted that they knew that this was a risk, this breakage and this huge leak. They knew it was a risk, and yet it was already a catastrophe when it was just a small leak. 3 million gallons go into the river, destroys the Navajo territory where they can't even farm. They go to bring water to them, and they bring the water in oil-lined trucks. So now it's oily water that they're taking Native Americans to try to help them. And there's no accountability for that bureaucratic-caused emergency when they would have leveled the full weight and power and destructive force of the bureaucracy on that private operator.
It's astounding the amount of devastation that these policies are creating. All right, let's take our break right there. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Representative Ken Ivory coming back. We're going to be talking about some remedies. And we're back. We're talking with Representative Ken Ivory, and who is also president of the American Lands Council. That is AmericanLandsCouncil.org, if you'd like to go visit that. And they are championing the national movement for states to take control of the federal lands within their borders. We're wrapping up talking about the mismanagement of state and federal lands, and in particular some of the devastating fires. And Ken, during the break there, you were mentioning what happened there in Montana, and this is just insane.
Yeah, it's absolutely astounding, Mark. So in the state of Montana, they have fire crews that get on scene within minutes. I think their average is less than 10 acres burned on site. And so as the fires broke out in Montana, the governor of Montana had helicopters ready to roll, and the United States Forest Service refused the offer of assistance from the state with the helicopters trained to fight fires, proven track record of fighting fires, because their particular helicopters are not on the approved U.S. Forest Service list.
Just insane. It's absolutely
insane. Madness.
Yeah.
It's absolute madness. And so those helicopter pilots sat there. They could have been on the scene within minutes. They sat there for hours as the fire continued to spiral out of control.
So what was the consequences then of them leaving them grounded?
Well, there again, we have these unaccountable bureaucratic agencies that you have no one to hold accountable. Think about it. If that were a private company that for whatever reason said, okay, we have the helicopters, we're not going to put them in the air, we're not going to mobilize, and it's a private forest, and it causes the devastation and the smoke and the wildlife and the water loss. No, they would be put out of business with the with the damages and the penalties that would be brought to account.
But in terms of leaving those grounded, do they have an estimate of how many additional acres end up burning as a result of that mismanagement?
Yeah, I don't know the exact number, but again, the state has their history is their fires are out within less than 10 acres burned.
Wow.
They're able to control fires to less than 10 acres burned as they mobilize and they're on site. Because Mark, they're there. They know their landscape. They know the wind patterns. They know the fire patterns. And it's their life and their livelihood and their recreation areas and their wildlife that they love and cherish. It's not a bureaucrat on a 2-year rotation.
That's right. That's right. So I do want to talk to you about some of the remedies that are out there. And during the break, you had also mentioned that there was a study by a group in California. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that in terms of what actual management would look like and the benefits to that?
Yes. Yes, so again, these are the most avoidable catastrophes in our nation's history. California, we know, is facing a drought. We hear it in the news every single day. University of California Merced scientists studied these Sierra Nevadas and the inordinate fuel loads, the tree densities that are built up because of failed federal forest policies, and they concluded that if they just harvested the Sierra Nevadas to the sustainable tree density, something on the order of 50 or 60 trees to an acre instead of thousands, you know, hundreds to thousands, they would conserve substantially more than a quarter trillion gallons of water a year. These are real solutions. Now, and at the same time, by harvesting the forest at the sustainable density, you would have funding for education and public safety and have healthier habitat and reduced fire risk. And yet, the forest policy is simply to manage the land for maximum combustion and maximum budget to fight fire rather than preserve stable, healthy communities, watershed, air quality.
Yeah.
It's absolutely outrageous.
It is outrageous. I mean, it is literally like watching money burn up in those hills, whether we're burning it simply because we didn't take it out or we're burning that money in terms of fighting these fires that we should be spending that money elsewhere. We only got about a minute here with you. You have a presentation coming up on September 12th. That's a Saturday. Runs from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's there at Sunridge Best Western over there in Baker City. And, of course, we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well on our events page. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about what you're going to be talking about and give us some insights.
Well, it's time for us to get engaged. We have the 2016 election cycle coming up, and we have a choice. We can hire and inspire leaders with the knowledge and the courage to make the changes where we can manage our own land and govern ourselves and protect the health and the safety and the welfare of our lands, or we can continue to sit on our hands and allow unelected bureaucrats to continue to do the same thing over and over again with these conditions that are just absolutely devastating. So it's time for people to get on the American Lands Council website, log in, sign in, and let us know you want to volunteer and get engaged. And we're moving forward on what we call Solutions 2016. It's time to get our leaders at every level engaged that there's a very simple solution, more effective local control of our lands for better access, better health, and better productivity.
Yep, better management. And elections, once again, we see this all the time. Elections have consequences. Representative Ken Ivory, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure, Mark. Thank you for the information you get out.
It is time for us to get going. Hey, you know how there's these internet rumors about FEMA camps? Maybe we ought to round up all the environmentalists, drag them out of downtown Portland, and make them go live in the burned-out forest. You know, the ones their policies caused. Or wouldn't it be nice to pass a law that says you can pass no laws that affect areas in which you do not personally live? Wouldn't that be nice? I know I'm dreaming, but elections do have consequences, and it's time to make some changes. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.